RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frank.
Frank this week, huh?
What was I last week?
Stinkle sign or something?
Funkly or something like that?
Yeah.
Today I'm just Frank. I have no will.
No, you're beaten. You're a beaten man.
I'm a beaten dog.
And beans. And it is Friday, June 22nd, 2018 at 5 p.m. on the eastern side of the country. We are here today with a lot to talk about since last week, which was a day after the IG report dropped. And it was definitely a roller coaster of emotion since then. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's been a very big roller coaster. Big roller coaster. Not only was that, did that come out to much fanfare and everybody jumping to their respective conclusions. But then, of course, we had all the hearings this week. And there were some people that were watching it. Everybody else was talking about a very convenient border crisis that has now appeared, even though it's been here for decades.
Yes, the border crisis, which I have to say is inexplicably tied to the hearings. And we're going to go into that today. Amongst several other topics. Let's talk about that first. Now, I decided on Tuesday that I was going to live tweet the 6 hours and some minutes of hearings.
Saint. You're a saint.
Yeah, it seemed to be very helpful for people. And, you know, you can't help but throw in some hysterical, you know, tidbits like the Charlie Brown phone, because sometimes I was like, it was just ridiculous. But I noticed something, Frank. I pulled out a bunch of clips and I did a couple review videos of like some of the more notable clips, but it really was just like a repetitive exercise. The Democrats claiming that they didn't find any bias and that Hillary Clinton was innocent, and the Republicans claiming that there absolutely was bias, just, you know, making Horowitz the saint that he is, I'll be quite honest, repeat himself over and over again about the difference between the two conclusions the report made. Do you even understand the two conclusions?
It's been convoluted by all of the opinions. And like I said, no, in many respects I don't, only because there's so much in the actual report itself that contradicts what the conclusion said, almost what it says on the surface. But then again, surface doesn't mean anything because this is all written in legalese and every word has a double meaning that the average person just doesn't know. And I'm one of those average people.
We'll go through it quickly. And I want everybody out there to put on your like logical philosophical, put your philosophical hats on.
Okay.
All right, you got it on? Here we go. This is the way that the IG report was done. They were tasked with investigating certain decisions, not all of them. Horowitz said there's no way we could have looked at every decision made to come to the conclusion whether there was bias or not. So they looked at certain decisions where they ruled that the IG is not relitigating this. They're not reinvestigating it. They're not looking into evidence of whether Clinton was innocent or guilty. They are specifically making a decision about whether the decisions the prosecutors made were influenced by bias. The prosecutors are not the FBI team managing the operation. So the prosecutors are separate from Strzok and Page. Just very important to get that out there. On the decisions that Horowitz chose to analyze, he was not able to prove with documentary evidence, meaning somebody said, F Trump, we got to take him down, from the prosecutorial team, that the decisions that they made were made out of political bias or animus.
Okay, so pretty much right there, you're saying that that Strzok and Page, they are on the investigative side of things. They're not prosecutorial. Therefore, that is why when they say no bias here, it's not saying that Strzok himself wasn't working under, you know, wasn't working with his bias as his guide per se, was or was not. It's not even actually paying attention to that part of it.
Right, because for the decisions they analyzed, Strzok had zero input into those decisions.
Mm.
So if Strzok would have said, let's work together on this, I want you to do A, B, and C, different story. But because he was not involved in the decisions, the inspector general wasn't able to find any evidence that those people who made the decisions were biased against Trump. So he came to the conclusion that those decisions, which he says over and over and over again, he's not making a blanket statement about the entire investigation. It's the decisions that were chosen were not influenced by bias. However, even when he starts his opening statement, he's very clear and very strong about the fact that there absolutely was, in fact, bias in the decisions that Peter Strzok made in regards to the mid-year exam. When it comes to the fact that when presented with the Wiener laptop, Strzok decided he was going to prioritize the Trump-Russia investigation over the Wiener laptop issue. In other words, he chose not to focus on the mid-year exam anymore, even with the new evidence that came out. And he chose to focus only on the Trump-Russia investigation and several other little decisions that he made. And that's how they came across all these text messages and you know, they expanded. And the conclusion from this, if you are a functioning human with the brain who's paid attention, a lot of people don't have time, but if you've paid attention, you see that the FISA Inspector General's report that will be coming out shortly is going to be absolutely damning in terms of the Russia investigation and the targeting of President Trump.
See, okay, and I totally get that. Now, here's what I want to get around to and ask you another series of questions. Well, maybe one question. When you say we're talking about investigative and prosecutorial and bias in one place and no bias can be found, documentary evidence of bias can be found on a prosecutorial sense. My understanding up to this point was that the investigative body of the FBI never actually even gave they actually ran a cover fire operation for the prosecutors at the DOJ by recommending that no charges should be filed. So where did prosecutors even – I thought that this was all investigative, the mid-year exam thing. I didn't even know that prosecutors were involved at that point.
Prosecutors were involved, and so was a grand jury. They never brought any person in front of the grand jury. They never even – I think there was only one subpoena that they received. Basically, the prosecutors sat their witnesses down that they brought in, compelled them to testify by dangling immunity agreements and whatever else they decided to do in front of them, and got them to testify, you know, or to question them so that they could ultimately lead themselves up to the big fish, which would be Hillary Clinton. But there were, and again, the IG ruled in the exoneration of Hillary Clinton, which was done previous to the point that they had interviewed her, which was criticized by the IG very, very, very fervently. They ruled that there was improper, improper norms followed. He didn't follow protocol, Comey, when he did what he did. And they brought the hammer down on Comey in addition. So the decisions that the Democrats have chosen to focus on, the no bias conclusion, is maybe a sliver of the rest of the story that the IG report actually goes over. But of course, that tailors to their narrative. So they've picked up on that and used it as a blanket for the rest of the IG report. And Horowitz goes into, you know, painstakingly goes through why that's, you know, that conclusion is not the right conclusion, really. Like, for example, they question him and say, first of all, the Democrats have now made obstruction of justice in terms of Trump firing Comey a non-issue. There is no way on God's green earth that anybody could bring an obstruction charge against Trump now that the Democrats have all gone into this hearing and made the case for how horrible Comey was to do what he did and how he broke protocol. And that's the reason why Trump fired him in the first place. So they've destroyed any Mueller obstruction charge that in and of itself is interesting. Do you understand what I mean when I say that?
Yes.
So, yep. So in their hubris, they destroy Comey for talking about this mid-year exam investigation, but not talking about the Trump-Russia investigation. However, every time that's brought to Horowitz's attention as a question or a statement, Horowitz responds by saying, correct, he did, you know, he didn't keep it a secret, as they keep all saying. He followed protocol and he didn't talk about the Trump-Russia investigation, and he adds every time, nor did he talk about the Clinton Foundation investigation that was also ongoing at the time. In other words, don't try to point your finger at Comey for trying to help Trump like you're doing. He kept another Clinton investigation under wraps also at the same exact time.
Right. So, and I've seen that too, the whole the two timing there. Once again, like when I was watching Hakeem Jeffries you know, do his little song and dance, and he in like the same sentence he would go off and try to make a claim that Comey was helping Trump, and also and Trump was being helped by the Russia, and it's like almost everything was coming together. Like everybody was helping Trump, both the FBI. And, I mean, and, but then again, when Trump goes and fires Comey, that is sure evidence of obstruction at the same time. So, I mean, that's what I said on my show a couple of nights ago. If you've ever been able to observe children who know that they've been caught up in a bad situation, even if they they're being found out for taking place in something that was a little bit too naughty, or even if it was something they weren't themselves doing, but they just have friends, little Eddie Haskell friends that are problems, and they want to be able to defend their friends' reputations with their parents, because the last thing that a kid wants is to have their peers to actually not like their friends. That is what I'm seeing coming out of the Democrat members, especially of this House committee. It's just, it does not matter what the issue is. The game plan so far has been change topics, take that last conclusion page about no bias and extrapolate it out to the entire world, that everything was done by the books and this is a complete farce and all that stuff. And that's what it is. It's like you said before, use no bias to extrapolate it out, and also change topics, concentrate on some kind of an immigration crisis as if it's new. And I mean, you don't need to know all the details, and you don't need to be well versed in any of this stuff to be able to see what the game plan is for the other side right now.
No, and that's let's segue, great segue into what I wanted to mention, and then we can talk about, because it has been disgusting to exist over the past couple of days, given what we're seeing with what's happening with this immigration, you know, talking point. They trotted out the Trump Foundation scandal, which is not even, it's ridiculous. Of course, the New York AG, or whoever's acting AG, has a bone to pick with Trump now, and blah, 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 blah. It didn't catch on. Nobody cared. So they decided they were going to go after this whole children at the border being ripped from the arms of their parents and thrown into internment camps like Nazi Germany and slavery and, you know, the Chinese back in the day or whatever in California. And Cummings, in this House hearing, opened up. His opening was all about this immigration thing. He cried. I mean, it was bad. It was bad acting. I ripped it apart on my video that I did for my channel. I ripped it apart. It was disgusting. And I was like, oh, geez, okay. And in the beginning, they actually had to escort some people out because of protest. But then it settled down. And for, you know, for the most part, for the first half before lunch, it was pretty even keeled in terms of like actual questions being answered. As a matter of fact, a lot of representatives got to speak more than once. And in their first go round in the first half, they were generally straightforward with questions. They went out for a 45-minute break, and it's like they all huddled together. They got their leader from wherever their leader exists, Soros, whoever it is, sent them a memo and said, you guys got to ratchet up. It's time. It's time. It's time for us to bring this to the next level. We're pretty screwed now, given these hearings are not going the way we want. We need to take the narrative. Let's go after immigration hardcore. We've got protests planned. It's got to go now. The same people that had already spoken, second half of this hearing, they're all going on and on about how un-American Trump is, keep yanking children out of their parents' arms and throwing them. It was over the top, and I pointed out every time this happened. It was very well planned. After that, we see Trump getting heckled and cursed at as he walked through the hall. And then we have the Department of Homeland Security secretary that evening getting heckled and hassled at a restaurant. And we have the doxing of ICE agents that evening as well. Very well planned.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And most of the hecklers are actually government employees, too.
This is, yes. And this is, if you do not understand yet how evil these people really are, Cummings lied over and over. This is a Trump administration policy. This is a Trump created, you know, thing. We know that's not the case. It's just a lie. And this emotional carrot they're dangling in front of people who don't know any better, who take them at their word. They're guilty. If God forbid one of our ICE agents or anyone else is harmed, it is on them.
They eventually they're going to get somebody killed.
But no doubt.
Eventually, they're going to get somebody killed. I mean, they've already gotten, because you know that the country is full of unstable people. That's number one. They've already found a way to get into the mind of one guy. I mean, Steve Scalise.
Yeah.
Steve Scalise and most of the softball team out there in D.C., if it weren't for the Capitol Police, I would have to say that the Charlottesville death, the chalk score that everybody's, I guess, trying to keep here about who's the extremist, whatever, the score would look a little bit different if it weren't for the Capitol Police. You know, that's already happened. And whereas you're not ever rooting for this thing or anybody to be, you know, worse than the other or just for political points, they don't seem to care about that.
They don't. And they're and you know, I made a point yesterday. Anybody look. There are the extremists, and we see them more amplified because the media parrots them. Twitter's full of them. They're elevated, you know, elsewhere. But there are a swath of everyday Americans walking around who are Democrats who are made to feel as though they are in the minority for thinking that this is disgusting. And they're afraid to speak out about it. They're afraid to speak out about it because the popular crowd will kick them out of the club. It is a melding of pop culture and extremism, which is chilling. And I appealed yesterday to people to understand this for what it is and come together at least on this one thing and say enough is enough. This is getting absolutely out of control. Somebody's going to be killed. It's Antifa. It's Soros. It's organized. This is not an accident.
Well, and what is the club? What is the club right now? It's not even so much that they're going to be distanced in some kind of a political way, organizationally or anything like that. Like, let's say that you are a public servant on a local level and all of a sudden you're not getting the support from your party if you want to seek re-election for a city council because of a stance that you took that's a little bit more moderate than the crazies that are running and leading the party. It's not even like that. The club for many people, just ordinary people, is that you don't want to say a damn thing because you want to keep the friends and the family around you your entire life. You don't want to say goodbye to the life that you had. I mean, this is so much more than this is what ultimately Marxism is designed to do. This is what this cultural Marxism is designed to do. Your blood relations, what you grew up around, anything that you could have considered a foundational part of your life is compromised by the groupthink that has been introduced by people who actually stand to gain from all this chaos, because nobody else is actually going to feel the benefit of open borders, and nobody else is going to be feeling the benefit of any of these other nonsense narratives that are being pushed, except those at the top. That's it.
Right, exactly. And it's funny that you say that because, you know, we talk about collectivism and group and group sort of herding, how dangerous it is and how it is a means to strip individuals of the power that they have to make decisions for themselves, to be free people. And you look at what Jeffries did, our friend Jeffries from New York, right? He basically called, he started saying that the FBI basically assassinated Clinton, and he made her a victim. And I said in my video, by making Clinton a victim, it doesn't mean that Clinton lost her power. No. It means that he has victimized now the entire swath of people that supported Clinton into victim status, which strips them of their power. So this is all very well organized, you know, brainwashing that's going on that people inside can't see. And to top it all off last night, Frank, WikiLeaks decided they would take it upon themselves to publish on their website the basically doxing list of LinkedIn profiles of ICE employees.
Wait, WikiLeaks?
WikiLeaks.
Wow. See, anybody who says that they're on one side or the other, that's why I say, you know, it's all convenient. Let's just go back just 2 minutes right now. You talk about Hakeem Jeffries talking about the FBI assassinating Hillary Clinton's chances of being president. She assassinated all of the hopes of people who thought that they actually had picked and were going to put a candidate they believed in. And Bernie Sanders, she actually took away the voice of Democrat voters. But now we're saying that the FBI took away the voice of Democrat voters by taking away the voice of the woman who took away Democrat voters' voices. And then on top of that, once again, when it always comes down, because she has done her own little globetrotting tour about the FBI and James Comey's letter and the October surprise that she blamed her election loss on. I mean, remember, everybody at home, this is a woman who lost the Electoral College by 75 votes. You're telling me that letter was worth 75 votes? So 75 Electoral College votes, that's what James Comey's letter is? He should go into business. He should just write letters for the rest of his life if he has that much influence.
It's true. I did a very unscientific poll yesterday because I was contemplating this very thing, what you said about Bernie supporters. And I said, I have a question for former Bernie supporters who are now, you know, MAGA, meaning like Trump. If Bernie runs again in 2020, who are you going to vote for, Trump or Bernie? 1,555 people voted. Do I have any scientific way of proving who they are or what their ideologies are? No. But 96% of them said that they would be voting for Donald Trump. 96% of 1,555 votes were for Trump, and 58 comments from actual real, what used to be progressive Bernie supporters underneath saying, I will never, ever go back and be that way again. So who's winning?
You tell me. Here's the thing that frustrates me, and I always have to keep telling myself, I'm frustrated by what we are fed every day. Right before you and I went live, I mean, when we were talking about the IG hearings just a little while ago, we're going from one thing to the other, where at first we're talking about Russia collusion. We're talking about a DNC hack that is still unfounded, that we can't even examine the evidence or the servers or anything like that. So we're going every day by the narratives pushed by the Democrat media, the liberal media, the progressive media. There's no liberalism in their platform. And then you have we're going from there. Then we go to the dossier being exposed. We go to Papadopoulos. We start seeing all of the spies and the human resources that are out there. Things start crumbling as they go along. Then they have to start relying on porn stars. The porn stars fall through. Nobody cares anymore because that's backed up by nonsense. We start going at, and now we have Tom Arnold.
Yeah.
Tom Arnold, Michael Cohen and I are teaming up to take down Trump, and Michael Cohen has all the tapes. You see, this is what it is. It was never about trying to find out the truth about something, whether it would be election meddling or this and that. It was never about that. And nobody cared. Everybody also who was following this intently knew that as well. They all want Trump gone. They want this to be impeachment. They want election results that they don't approve of to be reversed, and they don't care what they have to do. I just wish that they would come out, take their masks off, and say what they want instead of pretending that they are really hot on the trail of a criminal enterprise when they're not, because they've spent the last 10, 20 years covering up for criminal enterprise. That's exactly what's going on here. And that's the most frustrating thing, because outside of all of that, I do not see, just like during the election, when we were seeing a 95% chance that Hillary Clinton wins, and all of the, you know, 12% differential in the national polls, and this and that. But meanwhile, she couldn't fill up high school cafeterias for her rallies, and Trump was packing arenas. I did not see any enthusiasm on the ground. I did not see anything that told me that, wow, this really does look like it's going to go one way or the other. And the polls really do reflect what I'm seeing elsewhere. The same thing's happening here. What you just said there, what do you think the confidence level is? What do you think the reality is, as opposed to what these fakers at every turn, these fakers are feeding us every day? It does not match up to what I'm seeing and feeling elsewhere. This blue wave is going to be a toilet flush. I'm telling you, it's
especially if they keep going like this. You know, they, I don't know what they think they're accomplishing, but they're not accomplishing much. They're firing up the crazies on their side that believe in this nonsense. But other than that, they're not accomplishing anything with real everyday Americans who will keep their vote to themselves after they while they walk into that booth and after they walk out of it.
Tracy, I'll put it to you this way. They have absolutely nothing to lose. If you are the Jake Tappers of the world, you have nothing to lose, or the, you know, the Tom Perez's of the world. You have nothing to lose, because what you're seeing is you're seeing people starting to consider that things aren't as bad as people promised they would be. They're starting to consider that perhaps there's more to the world than just the progressive platform and the platitudes and the headlines. And if you're in that case, if you're in that position where you're the DNC who's broke, you've run out of influence, you have no good candidates, you have absolutely no sex appeal whatsoever, but all you have is the media, you are in a position right now where you have to make a choice. Do you want to allow people, do you want to take your foot off the gas and allow people to assess reality for themselves and slowly make their way away from your radical nonsense, because you have absolutely no intention of sharing America with people and sharing the government, sharing power with people and actually living in a free society?
They're running on raising taxes, Frank.
That's it. I mean, they don't have anything, but they also don't want any other differing opinions. So do you want to allow people to go and make their decisions for themselves? Or do you say, hey, listen, it's either we're going to lose them. We're going to lose them through natural means of people just seeing that reality is not matching up to all of the doomsayers. Or are we just going to double down and say that, no, this really is the second coming of Hitler and it's the Fourth Reich? They have to go crazy right now, because it's either they do that and people leave because they realize that they're crazy, or they don't do that and people leave because they realize that reality isn't as bad as they said it was. So they really have no choice. So they have to double down, because ultimately they don't want to share power. So it's one of those things where if I can't have you, nobody will. And they're trying to take down the whole fucking thing. Oh, shit.
It's okay.
I tried to clean it up for your
You tried to clean it up and then you did it again. Cleaning it up.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. We're a podcast. It's okay.
You're right.
So listen, everything that you said and the emotion with which you said it, I think is what people are feeling out there. You're right. It's do or die. And you're right. They have nothing to lose. So why not throw it out there? Let's go back quickly to this Michael Cohen thing, though, because we just saw this right before we came live. Let me say, Tom Arnold, and he is I can say this because I was directly attacked by Tom Arnold, okay? He is a scumbag. He came after me, calling me a Nazi conspiracy theorist a few months back because Roseanne Barr had retweeted something that I said. And so since he hates Roseanne so much, you know, she's alleged all sorts of things about their relationship, but he hates her so much that he takes whoever she retweets, even somebody like me, like a normal everyday citizen with like, what, 90,000 people following them on Twitter. Like, I'm just normal. I'm like a normal person. I'm not some media acolyte. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he'll take his time to attack me personally in a series of tweets. Now he's teaming up with Michael Cohen. And let me just read some of this article. It's from The Hill Reporter. I don't know who this outlet is. I just saw it on Twitter, so off we go. It's been quite a roller coaster ride for Michael Cohen and his family over the course of the last 18 months. Cohen, Trump's personal attorney for the better part of two decades, has found himself front and center in both the Mueller probe and a separate investigation in the Southern District of New York on top of the Stormy Daniels civil case. Over the last couple weeks, media reports have indicated that Cohen is still on the fence in regards to possibly cooperating with investigators who appear to be going after people much higher than him, including the president himself. Another day, we'll talk about that. On the other end of the spectrum, you have Roseanne Barr's ex-husband and Hollywood star. That's a stretch. Would you agree?
Star, what, True Lies?
Yeah.
Yeah, the 5 minutes of screen time in True Lies. Okay.
Tom Arnold investigating what he believes may be multiple tapes of Trump in compromising situations. Arnold is actually working with Viceland on a new show titled, quote, The Hunt for the Trump Tapes with Tom Arnold, which is sure to be a hit, especially among Democrats in the Never Trump crowd. Earlier this year, I reached out to Arnold after noticing that he was seeking information regarding the alleged tapes on the president, and he said, I'm not working alone, Brian. You'll know the other names. I'm dragging people out on Twitter. It's part of the plan, and it's working soon. So what happens when you get the two of these men together in New York City? Apparently, you get answers. Tom Arnold posts an image to Twitter saying, I love New York. It's him standing next to Michael Cohen. And then shortly after this, Tom Arnold says, we've been on the other side of the table and now we're on the same side. It's on. I hope Trump sees the picture of me and Michael Cohen and it haunts his dreams. He then went on to reveal a bombshell, which seems to indicate Cohen is done playing around and that both him and his wife are frustrated and let down by Trump's behavior. I say to Michael, guess what? We're taking Trump down together. And he's so tired. He's like, okay. And his wife is like, okay, F Trump.
What are in the tapes? What tapes? What is he talking about?
I don't know, but if they had anything worse than the Access Hollywood tape, you would have think they would have paraded this crap out already.
It would have been out there already. And here's the other thing that they can continue to just not understand. They don't understand this, that it's not so much that people can act inappropriate over the course of a lifetime. The problem is that when you are part of a party that has completely distanced themselves from any kind of sense of morality, that their concern, it's not so much when people come to me and, you know, and talk to me, well, what do you think about this thing at the border? Isn't it nuts? Isn't it crazy? Isn't it unfortunate? I said, listen, yeah, well, the way that people who cross the border illegally sometimes have to be handled is unfortunate. The fact that children are brought into it is unfortunate. The fact that men cheat on their wives and wives cheat on their husbands and these things happen out there. And sometimes people who make these mistakes in life and commit these acts in life are people who hold public office or they're celebrities and they're in the public eye and all that stuff. And it comes to light. It's not the fact that those things don't happen, and it's not the fact that, you know, because of one way or another, the impact that those things have on a society or a group of people is any less unfortunate. The problem is that when you've already committed to not caring about morality and not caring about anything that smacks of, you know, decency and women, and that you protect this person who has affairs and this person who abuses this person in hopes of being able to take a political edge on things. If you are an all out abortion till the 9 month mark type of a person, but you're going head over heels for the children at the border, you have to understand something. It's not that these things inherently are unfortunate and are a little bit dirty in nature. It's just that your concern is completely invalid. Your concern right now in any of these things are completely invalid. For Tom Arnold, above all people, and people like this to be going out there and say, we have tapes. And you think that anything that people can see on Donald Trump as an individual is going to be able to harm him when the people who are peddling this are on the left, the Marxist left, what they do in Hollywood and the messages they send out there and how they conduct themselves at rallies and the things that they say into television cameras. Peter Fonda wishing rape on Donald Trump's youngest son.
Yeah.
You that anything that Michael Cohen and these tapes that would have already been out if they were actually criminal in nature would actually hurt this president, especially if it's being presented by the left, is going to do anything? They're out of the, they don't understand how they're actually hurting themselves, and they haven't even done it yet.
No, they don't. For all of their, you know, for all of their outrage and their feigned outrage and crocodile tears, they're really, for people who have successfully sort of co-opted the media, co-opted Hollywood, co-opted education over decades of time, right? They've infiltrated, co-opted. It was a very carefully well-laid plan. For people that have done that, they don't understand the climate that we're in right now. They don't understand the American people. They certainly don't understand what a disadvantage they're at and how ridiculous they're making themselves look. It's crazy how they have miscalculated this entire campaign of theirs, and it's going to resort to violence. It is going to, I'm telling you, that it's very clear at this point that this is what they want. And they did it in Charlottesville. The whole Charlottesville thing was, it wasn't just that a bunch of alt-right crazies decided to go and walk with torches to wherever they walked. It was that the Antifa was there to beat them down as they did it. And they want normal, everyday Americans like me and you to pick up some sort of a weapon and go and confront them. That is the desire.
Yeah, or scream at people as they're having a dinner until they leave the restaurant, and they don't want to share even the same physical space as you. You need to leave, and that's exactly what it comes down to. You look at this in this intolerance and this lack of self-awareness. I mean, they're the least self-aware people on the planet to think that this is going to help them. And I don't know.
Nobody cares. It's done. It's tired. It's old. It's funny because, like, you know, people get desensitized to this stuff. And that's exactly why they did the whole, you know, sexual assault parade the way they did it. They did it that way very particularly because people got desensitized and just did. Oh, that's all that happened. Oh, he just spoke to it. You know what I mean? People got desensitized to it.
Well, listen, you want to talk about the lack of self-awareness, too, and a little bit more of just desensitization. No, nobody. Is anybody even considering still? Remember, there's a reason why the choices in 2016 was Donald Trump, the game show host, real estate developer. Okay. There's a reason why the choices were Donald Trump, game show host, real estate developer, and Hillary Clinton, who actually had to steal the nomination away from a 74-year-old banana republic socialist.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You understand that we don't care about comments, and nobody cares about it's not so much that nobody cares about affairs and infidelity. What I should have said is nobody is going to allow that to be the deciding factor in a point in our history that is so beyond the pale. It is so beyond what any other era of Americans have had to be able to face, that when you look at the problems we really have in the culture, economically, on the world stage, militarily, the way that our allies and our enemies see us in the world, and whatever the hell it is, and of course the civic nature of what we have going on at home with our borders, with our relationship between the people and government, you know, federalism, our history, we're being detached from our history. It's being wiped off the map so that some kind of postmodernist world can be flung onto the people over here. With all of that going on, there is just, even for the most morally centric people and voters in the United States, it's just not time to nitpick about who is diddling who in their free time. Nobody cared about it before.
Right. So, and I know if you look at Trump's, you know, they thought that they would, and even the evangelicals would jump ship over that stuff. And they even said, nobody's perfect. You know,
and whatever's going on in our households, morality is up to us and our congregations to make sure that our families and our children are in order. Government is nobody should be looking up to a president or a politician to be able to be a moral compass. It's up to the people. You know, so.
Yeah. And, you know, when you frame the issues that way, it's true. And, you know, this is what I fear, but this is one of the things that I think people really need to start understanding, even those who may be on the cusp of really realizing what's happening, that the media comes out and they program, and I know it sounds cliche, but they really do, that this is still, they make it bad. And then when you don't agree, like we're talking about right now, you feel like you are few when you are not, you are many. And so because they make you feel as though you are few, you start to say, wait a second, am I wrong here? They did it with the transgender bathrooms. They did it with the transgenderism as a whole. It's these topics where there's a minority, and in order to advance their agenda, they need to make these things a majority issue. So they blow them up the size of, you know, the universe to make people feel like they're in the minority if they disagree. If we recognize this and we use it as we plan our strategy moving forward, I think we have a real chance at changing it.
I believe 100% I'm with you. And I would like to just say that even when I am at my most frustrated, it's once again just because the only thing that the left has right now is that veneer. They put these veneers over this dirty, rotting mouth of theirs. So you think that they have this bright smile and they have the headlines and they're in control of things, but it is just, it's an empty husk. And the only thing that's frustrating is that they're still able to somewhat steer and control and create new narratives. Whereas I do believe, and the hopeful thing is that underneath that, I know that people are for the large part seeing that, just because, and I know that it's a generalized thing to say, hey, well, you know, the people are speaking on behalf of a nation or something. But if you're on social media, the one thing that social media has given us all the ability to do is to observe large swaths of people every day. There's ways of seeing what the response of people are, whether or not people are talking about a certain topic in an approving or a negative way. You can actually you can plug into the average mind and see what's going on. And even though the legacy media is still doing their thing, people are waking up to the game. It doesn't matter how they vote.
If you're out there, I'm talking to you, people waking up to the game. If you're out there and you're listening to this, hiding in your closet somewhere, you know, so nobody knows, start to, as Dan Bongino would say, dance. Start to dance, start to get out there, and start to just start putting, you know, put your foot down and say, this isn't right. This isn't true. This is a lie. You know, we had, I don't know if you saw yesterday, Frank, they went out and they showed the 2014 pictures of the immigration centers down south. And they show them to people in Washington, D.C. on the street. And they said, you know, they were like, oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. You know, what do you, who would you blame for this? Trump, 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 Trump. And then told them, by the way, this was under Obama. These pictures were taken. And I was amazed. I thought people would be indignant. You know how when Fleckus usually goes out, he's got some people that are like, oh, no. These people were like, well, you know, I don't think we're being told the truth lots of times. And it wasn't. Mm. You know, it wasn't, oh, well, that's, you know, who cares? You know, it was, wow, I guess we're being lied to again. So that's a different response than we're used to hearing from people. It's crazy. It's really like, it's crazy. We're in the Truman Show, but we are the ones who are kind of hovering above it. It's really nuts.
Oh, we're at the back wall.
Yeah.
We're at the back wall. We're traveling through the storm at the end, and we're pushing our way to the back wall, and we're banging on the door now. We want out of the dome. That's pretty much it. Ed Harris is trying to get us, the voice of God in the media is trying so badly to get us back to go back to our nice little existence before, where they're in control and everything is fine as long as you follow what they're giving you. And we're just ignoring their voices. We're ignoring Ed Harris, and we're just getting ourselves to the back of the wall, the Truman Show.
And we're going to break out of it. I'm telling you, we're going to break out of it. It's not going to win. They're not going to win. It's just not going to happen. It may be painful. It may be horrible. It may be rough. It's hard for anyone with a moral compass and any sort of you can see the difference from right from wrong, to see these people, you know, freaking out about these things on their with their feigned outrage, which, you know, the hypocrisy of it is disgusting. disgusting. These people claiming these, I'm sorry, but foreign children who are coming in here, sometimes unaccompanied. We have no idea why they're coming here. The whole issue in and of itself is enough. But we have, first of all, let's start here. We have children in this country who are starving on the streets every single day. Where's your outrage for them? We have Planned Parenthood speaking out against this practice at the border. There's 12,000 kids down there. Compare that as a percentage to the amount of children that you've killed over the past year alone.
Daily.
Right.
Daily.
And then say something to me. I mean, it's just disgusting. They can't believe this stuff. They can't. They can't believe it. What they're saying. They can't believe what they are saying.
I do not think that they do. I don't think they do. I just think that they know that they're talking to the lowest common denominator, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, when you look at Rachel Maddow trying to cry, I mean, doing whatever she can to cry where it looks like she's laughing. It's like, oh man, she's trying to get in on this crying nonsense too. I was thinking about this the other night. I'm like, when you think about television broadcast. Television has played such an important part in American culture and American history. I mean, not only the events that broadcasters and anchors have covered in the past, especially the first times that big things have been covered, whether it be the first time that a war has been covered in an intimate way, whether it be Vietnam, whether it be the Gulf War, where we're down there for a live broadcast during all this stuff. You know, you think about the first times that it's not just the events that are historic, but also the way that the events were covered at being historic, seeing, you know, consummate professionals on television showing glints of emotion as they provide information to you. But now, where you turn on the television every night and it is the norm for an adult to be sitting there in front of a camera with a quivering lip and welling up and eyes welling up with tears, giving you the nightly news, where it's like normal to see somebody breaking down like a child every night. It just doesn't have the effect. You can tell this is just acting. It's theater.
It is. And you know, I have to keep going back to Cummings on his open. This is it.
Help the children.
Oh, God.
We need the legislators here to help the children, please.
Like, legit, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, are we really listening to this right now? Like,
no, nobody is. Nobody of consequence is listening to that shit, because, you know, what it comes down to is also, and I said it last night, I think the funniest thing about all this is that you can tell how little they think about the people who are consuming mainstream media news as the be-all, end-all. Because when you can have Chuck Schumer 3 weeks ago saying week to week, there's a new scandal and they try to stick with something until it, you know, they try to go run with a story and hopefully it sticks. And when it starts running out of steam, they switch to something else and you never hear about the old story again. You remember about 2.5-3 weeks ago when we were talking about presidential pardons?
Yes.
Well, Chuck Schumer gets in front of the camera over here in New York like an idiot, and he says, "You are not a king, Donald Trump, President Trump. We are a constitutional democracy," whatever the hell that is. We are a constitutional democracy. You are not a king. And so he says that 3 weeks ago, and then as a member of congressional leadership, the only body in this country, in the world, that can make any kind of real concrete changes, truly legal changes of immigration policy as it is laid out in Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution, he is saying, "President Trump, take your pen and become a king."
Yeah, exactly.
We here in Congress need you to write law. So in one breath, just separated by maybe a week or two, they tell everybody, oh, my God, the dictator King Trump, here he is again, even though what was it? They're responding to a tweet, because he knows that he can lead the media around
like a dog.
Dog.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, they're actually asking him to become a dictator king. And that's what I think is one of the more impressive things about this executive order, about the border that he signed, is if you read the executive order, it really just accentuates that he does not have the power to do this.
Right. He extended the law by a day so that they would be sued. He basically extended the period in this under this clause by a day so that people would bring lawsuits and force Congress to do what they're supposed to do.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's genius.
He can sit there and he can he's actually saying the power is not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, how dare you reject unconstitutional power?
I know.
Because the Congress, especially if you're talking about Democrats, they have taken on one primary purpose, and that is to be the media wing of an ideological movement. They do nothing but park themselves in front of reporters and microphones and their Twitter accounts and television cameras, and they just go on and on and on, bloviating about one issue or the other. And they actually, when it comes time to sit down and make a deal or come down and sit down and do something, they don't show up. They don't care about people at the border. They just need it to stick around. We've known this for a long time. Yeah. But in the last couple of months alone, they've had opportunities to address DACA. They've had opportunities to address all this stuff.
He's given it to them on a platter.
Nothing.
No.
They didn't do anything.
No, and I have to say, the way you said that, you know, it is a breath of fresh air to have a president in office who understands his role as a chief executive.
I can't believe it'd be him.
I know.
When I voted for him, I voted, you know, I was very cautiously optimistic. I said, hey, you know what? I'm voting for the Supreme Court, and I hope that everything else is just, he just throws a wrench into the gears, and whatever else after that would just be gravy. I cannot believe, you know, even though it's not perfect, you know, talking about, you know, we can go into other things that I don't particularly like, but I mean, what more could we have asked for?
Nothing.
The choices that we had. Yeah. 2016.
Look, I'll be honest. Like, I never would have expected it. You know, supposedly he's some big authoritarian, you know, but it's crazy to see. It's crazy to see. It's wonderful. I was going through a list in my head the other day of all the things he campaigned on that he's done so far, or at least has been making earnest attempts to do. He's basically checked off. He's gotten every one of them. He's gotten every one of them at this point.
Well, Tracy, let me ask you something. Let's go back to about 70 years or something. You remember when Adolf Hitler had some ideas for immigration policy and all that stuff, and members of his own 41 members of his own party voted against it and blocked it and killed the bill? You remember that?
No, I wasn't alive yet.
Yeah. Well, it never happened. And apparently we have a dictator Hitler in office who is looking to exterminate whole swaths of people, and he's an authoritarian and all that stuff. I have never seen a dictator that has had such a hard time whipping votes from his own party that is in the majority than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So it's ridiculous.
And at the same time, the people claiming he's a dictator want to disarm the people that could, you know, prevent the dictatorship.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this clip. Listeners, you're not going to notice anything, but just to let you know, Frank, I'm going to hit the pause button real quick. Okay, so you guys didn't notice it, but there was a quick break because I came across this clip on Twitter of this dude, Donnie Deutsch, and I'm going to read you a transcript of what he said. I can't even believe that I listened to this. Frank listened to it too. We'll talk about it in a second, but he says, quote, "If we are working towards November, we can no longer say Trump is the bad guy. If you vote for Trump, you're the bad guy. If you vote for Trump, you are ripping children from parents' arms. The mistake we've made in the past is, look at that bad guy over there. Look at that bad guy over there. What the Democrats have to do is make the next election not about who Trump is, but who you are. That's the big difference. You can no longer, as a voter, because it's not about taxes. It's not even about some abstract form of immigrations or nationalism. If you vote for Trump, then you, the voter, you, not Donald Trump, are standing at the border like Nazis going, you here, you here. And I think we now have to flip it. And it's a given, the evilness of Donald Trump. But if you vote for Donald Trump, you can no longer separate yourselves. And I think that that's gymnastics and that jujitsu has to happen.
Yes, that's great. This is a great plan. Progressives, please follow this. Follow this plan. If you're ever going to have a choice between going and attacking a candidate or attacking tens of millions of people and likening them to children killing Nazis at the border, I think you should just stick to attacking the candidate. This is just amazing. It's amazing. Self-awareness, zero.
It's like he's basically saying, too, it's not even about policy anymore. It's just about demonizing people. Like he specifically says, it's not even about nationalism or immigration anymore. It's about that. We know Donald Trump is evil. Now we have to make sure his supporters feel evil, too.
As if they did not learn from Hillary Clinton calling people a basket of deplorables.
Yeah.
They didn't learn from Hillary Clinton. She made a mistake saying calling people deplorables, and it turned into a national rallying cry. This guy is actually doubling, tripling down on that. And I can't even fathom the mindset that creates this kind of this conclusion. I can't even fathom the mindset. It's just it's beyond me.
And this is a gentleman sitting here wearing a suit and tie in front of a picture of the Capitol building with a bar underneath saying the migrant children crisis is far from over, talking about how if the Democrats think they're going to win in November.
Tracy, how can anybody with a straight face say that it's not even about taxes? It's not about It's not about the laws that define what a nation are and where their borders are. This is what I'm talking about. They do not care about the concept of the United States. They don't care about a union. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about identity and culture. They don't care about creating a condition or creating an environment in which individuals can be able to live their lives free of political nonsense and free of political repercussions and any kind of pressure like that, which is what low taxation and ultimately emboldening the idea that people can actually plot their own course without having to ask somebody else permission first. They want all of that idea, all that. Don't even think about policy that can actually make you more free as an individual to plot your own course in life and build your own family, your own legacy, your own career. Forget about all those things that actually make you free. Just think about this. Are you a Nazi? And do you really want to have a nation?
They even admit at the end, he even admits that it would take gymnastics and jujitsu to get there.
It's
just, I can't believe what I just heard. I really can't believe what I just heard. And it's funny because, oh my gosh, Frank, we got to end because we're at 50 something minutes now. But at the end, they flip to the guys just sitting there looking at him, and they're just like, they've got these blank stares on their face. Like, am I really listening to this right now?
It's Joe and Mika, so they'll let anybody say anything.
It's funny because Juan Williams was on defending Fonda the other day, and he was on The Five, and I think they basically just jumped down his throat, like, how could you even defend this? And Williams accuses them of just using it as some kind of talking point to distract from the actual issue. Meanwhile, this dude, like you said, not only did he wish that a pedophile would attack Donald Trump's son, he also encouraged people to huddle around the school children who happen to be children of ICE officers to scare their children. This is where we're at. This is where we're at.
Yep.
If you don't see, there are good people out there that see this for what it is. Please start getting loud, because we're the ones who need to take responsibility to stop this noise. Your silence is complicity. I'm sorry. Ay, ay, ay. Thanks for joining us this week. It was a good show, right? Right, Frank?
I had a fun time. Let the weekend begin.
Let the weekend begin. Thanks for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frank
and Beans. You can hear us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We'll catch you next week, guys.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We all have challenges in our life, and the key is to be decisive. In order to be decisive, I need to know what are the risks, what are the rewards, what are the basics, and just kind of lay them out there in front of you and do your best to see what it is with no emotion. That's why I love coaching, because it is objective. It changes. The score system remains the same. That's the constant in all my coaching. That's how I've been able to coach 10 pro sports and 50 industries. But every day's fun and exciting. Not always for my clients when they call in, with a challenge. But I like the pressure. I've got 1 minute to help this person get ready for a big event.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.